Hi, I'm Bonnie Ross, and this is Lisi Kane.
Hello.
Before we get started with our fireside chat, I want to take a moment to acknowledge all the work that goes into an event like this. How many of you guys had a chance to participate in some of the other events today in Women for Gaming? Great. So what you may not be aware of is about more than 20 years ago, there were a few of us, there was no Xbox at this time, at Microsoft PC Gaming. They're at one of the E3s in Atlanta. And we were sitting in one of the Buckhead bars drinking one of those huge shared drinks with multiple straws, both hygienic and tasteful. And we were basically talking about how there were so few women at Microsoft, and then thinking about the rest of the industry and what could we do to start to network ourselves together. So we went back to our company and they said, yeah, let's do like a cocktail hour at GDC. Our first cocktail hour, we put up a bunch of pink signs saying a woman networking event. And a bunch of guys showed up thinking that it was guys meeting women in the gaming industry. But about 50 women showed up as well. And it kind of started where we moved to then a luncheon. And for those of you that have participated in the luncheon, our luncheon 2 years ago had 350 people attend, with many more we had to turn away. So the WIG committee has basically been thinking about new formats where we could get more women. And for this one, we have, I think, over 1,300 women that registered, which is amazing for our industry. So it does take a village to put this on, and I want to thank just a few people. Here in the audience, Shannon Loftus and Kiki Wolfkill are our exec sponsors for this event. Then we have Shelley, Angela, and Nicole, who are kind of our head of our WIG sponsors on this, and they kind of organized this whole thing along with their team. And then this year, for the first time ever, we partnered with other companies. So Ubisoft and EA are also here to put on a much bigger event, and I just wanted to thank everyone across all the companies for everything you guys did to put this on. So thank you. So now, the reason we are here. I am Bonnie Ross, and I'm head of 343 Industries, which is basically creates all things Halo. And this is Lisi Kane, and the reason why I did this. I'm going to talk a little bit about her in a second, but one of the reasons why I asked to do the fireside chat, as you will see, she's an amazing, amazing accomplished woman. And I've been in the industry since 1994. At least he told me she was four then. I could have been her babysitter. So this is kind of an old and new perspective, but it's mainly about Lisi. So she was on the 2017, if you could switch to her. This is her. She was on the 2017 Forbes 30 Under 30. And I want to read this quote because this is basically what they said about her. Lisi Kane is a producer in the video game industry, as well as a social good founder. I would like to be a social good founder. In addition to releasing her first game a couple years ago, Armella, and she released an iOS version last week, she's also the co-founder of Girl Geek Academy. Did I mention that she's done everything that she's done under 4 years? She and I share a passion for getting women into STEM. So you'll see we'll talk a little bit about her game experience and a little bit about what she's doing with Geek Girl Academy. So she didn't take a straight path to getting into games. Her journey was kind of a mixed one. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey?
So like a lot of people, I think there are a lot of people in the room that would have quite similar stories, but I grew up in a place called Brisbane in Australia, so it's pretty, thank you so much, one person from... Here for Brisbane. It's quite a small city in Australia. Australia in itself is very isolated. We're on the other side of the world. We grew up with video games, movies produced by Americans. So I played a lot of games when I was growing up, and I didn't really understand that I wanted to be in the industry till I was probably like early to mid 20s. I didn't even know people were making video games until I was in my early to mid 20s. until then, I'd always enjoyed technology. So when I was in high school was a time where I started building websites. I found that really interesting. I loved technology. I built a equivalent of a burn book website for my all-girl high school so people could post online really negative things about other people. So that
this
was really
before
bad.
She was a social good
yeah,
founder.
Yeah, this is terrible. This is terrible, terrible. I almost got expelled for that. So nobody, yeah, my mum doesn't know that still happened. So I love technology. For some reason, I was also put in charge of building the library's website because I thought they didn't understand technology at all at my high school. It was a very small school, all girls. Technology was not an option. So I didn't really figure out that you could work in tech when I finished high school. I thought, obviously, lawyer, doctor, business person. So I did a business degree for a year. Absolutely hated it. Thought it was the most boring thing in the world. And I bailed from that. I kept playing. I've always loved creativity. That's something that's another huge part of my life. I've played music since I was about 3. So creativity was something that I loved. So I started dabbling in playing in bands, toured Australia and playing in terrible pubs all over the place, and still had no idea what I wanted to do. I thought maybe I could be a rock star. That could be cool. You can't, it's really, really hard to be a rock star. It's probably harder than being a game developer, I think. So that was not an option. So I had to get a job. I worked at a bank, like a finance company in Australia for about 6 years, 7 years, just, you know, working my way up, starting in the call center, going from there, and then eventually getting a job as an executive assistant. And that kind of showed me information on how to be like project manager. So I had to run the lives of like 3 executives, making them organize. And at the time I thought, I was like, this isn't really what I want to do, but it's in technology. So I guess I could probably do this forever. And I had a really amazing boss there who knew that this was not for me. So really helped me understand and try and figure that out. So I went back to the drawing board, enrolled in university again, thought I should do film and TV because that's creative, I guess. That's, you know, film. I like films. I love TV. Still hadn't figured out that games were made by people at this stage, by the way. No idea. And did that degree for about a year. Once again, absolutely hated it because it was missing something. It was creative. It was incredibly creative. I was doing storyboards and all this kind of thing, but there was no technology element there that I could see or understand. So I left again, so second degree. Lots of, like, we have a thing in Australia where you just accrue a debt in the government. So my government debt at the moment is like incredibly high because I kept changing my mind. So changed my mind again, went back to the drawing board, and then I saw a degree. It had only been around for probably 2 years at this time, and it was a Bachelor of Game Design. And I was like, game design, like video games? I didn't understand that that was a thing, especially in Brisbane at the time. And I started doing my research, and then I realized that games were made by these people all over the world. I even realized that games were being made in Brisbane at that time, pre-global financial crisis. There were amazing studios making all these games, and I had no idea about it. And that's why I think it all happened so quickly, is because as soon as I figured it out, I'd realized I'd missed out on potential years of a career. And I was like, classic, time is ticking, you know, you gotta have babies soon, so we gotta get this train moving. So I rushed through my degree, had an amazing time at university, got to travel for university, do an internship, do all the things, and then that's kind of what lit that underneath me and really got me started. And also made me realize that I'm probably not alone in that journey. It's a very, very similar journey to a lot of people, I think.
What I think is interesting also, and I think it's when you think about what you've done. So you graduated when you were 23 or 24 or something.
Yeah.
But I mean, much older than a typical college graduate, which I think kind of put you on a really sort of path for what you were going to do. So then how did you end up with League of Games?
League of Geeks,
in games.
So we, after finishing my university degree, I did make the decision to leave Brisbane. Sorry, Brisbane. It's a good city to grow up in. There's some stuff going on there, but it felt a little bit suffocating. So I knew I had to leave. It was 2 options. I could move overseas and leave Australia, or I could move to Melbourne. So Melbourne is, if you haven't been there or heard about it, it's kind of like Seattle in a way. It's like a bit rainy, awesome food, awesome coffee, and has a really good game scene, really, really awesome games industry. At the time, I think around 50% of the games industry was based in Melbourne. So I thought, okay, this is it, let's do this. Jumped in a car. Well, I planned it. I planned all of this very thoroughly. Got in my car, didn't have a job at the time. I didn't have a house to live in. I had some friends that could put me up on couches and all that stuff. So I drove down to Melbourne, which is about 3 days over a period of time to drive down there. And I just started looking for work. I networked and talked to everyone I could. And by some chance with the work I was doing with Girl Geek Academy, I met Trent, who is now my boss. And we had some meetings about Free Play, which is an awesome festival in Melbourne. And we were chatting about how we could collaborate. And then the next week, I was working a day job as an advertising person, which was, you know, paying the bills and all that stuff. I got made redundant by that job, which was actually the best thing that ever happened to me. Because I got made redundant from that job, I reached out to Trent and said, I got made redundant. You know, seem to know people in the games industry. Trent is hosting the IGF tomorrow night, so he knows a couple of people in the games industry. So he was like, actually, we're about to hit early access. We need someone to help with production and community management. And I've heard from my experiences at university and the internships that I'd done that you've had experience. Would you be interested to come in for an interview? And I was like, yes. And then I started, I think, the following week. So it was a very, very rushed thing, but it was from a whole line of different things. Like, I don't like saying luck because it was built up from different things that I'd had and experiences that I've done. But yeah, that's pretty much the long story, short story.
And so then after you joined League of Geeks, I think that 18 months later, 2 years later, you shipped your first game, which is Armello, right?
Yeah, so we shipped, I think, about 8 months after I'd started.
I think we have a trailer. Do you want to tell us about, like, what is it and what we're going to see?
These little creatures. So Armello is a digital card and board game. So it is kind of like Game of Thrones meets Kung Fu Panda. Thank you. Thank you. So we've really, really honed that catchphrase because it always makes people laugh. But it's released on Steam and PlayStation and now is available on Xbox. And as of last Friday, before we all jumped on a plane, also on iOS. So, trailer. Really emotional watching that trailer. It's like the dark times. Yeah.
So when you, what was your role and what did you do on this game?
So I started off as an associate producer and community manager. So that was my first role. And that's because we were a pretty small team at the time. I think we were about 8 in studio or 7 in studio and we had a few contractors. And from there, one of my biggest jobs to begin with was getting us through early access and figuring out how to manage that and release on cadences regularly. And from there, I had to decide what I wanted to focus on. So having two roles was very difficult. And a producer generally has to take on so many things anyway. I wanted to focus a bit more. And I chose the production track because I think that's something that I've always been really interested in, something that I feel like I'm good at. So a lot of my job at the moment is definitely working with schedules, figuring out how we're going to deliver on time. A lot of it is also working with the people in our team and growing those people and making sure everyone's happy with their jobs and understand where they're going, understanding the directives. And because it's indie, it's literally anything else that needs to be done that isn't fulfilled by the people in the studio. So yeah, it's a pretty intense job, but I absolutely love it.
And how many women were there when you started?
None.
Gosh, wow.
In studio, there was none. Yeah.
So how many are there now?
We have 7 women in our team. So that's 40% of 17. So that's something
that's amazing.
Yeah. It's been something that we've been working on diligently since the beginning. It was something that the directors were very aware of at the beginning and wanted to solve. Being 3 white men, they knew that this was not something that they could sustain forever, continuing to hire the same people over again, because it doesn't result in good businesses, really. So they knew that.
And do you think, like, you know, does diversity attract diversity, or like, how did you attract more women, and was it intentional? Or
definitely, I don't think it was. A lot of it wasn't intentional. We really try very hard to, because at the end of the day, people will try and call you out and being like, are you just hiring to make a quota? Is this something that you're trying to do just because you want to be seen as a diverse company? And that's definitely not what we're doing. We're just looking at the way we show ourselves as a company. We want to be perceived as a company that lots of people would feel comfortable working at. And then also making sure that all of our recruitment practices are very ethical and fair across all different types of people. So not just gender, but all kinds of diversity. Because I think that especially in the indie world, it's really, really hard. We don't have a dedicated HR person. So how do we actually understand what that process looks like? So it's been something that we've been really working hard on, figuring out how to actually attract talent while ensuring that they're the best person for the job, as well as adding to the company as a whole. So they may have the skills, but they may not actually add to the company's future. So that's something that you have to look at. It's not just about on paper, they're qualified, but how are they going to grow with the company as well?
Great. So I love everything you've done in gaming in a very short time. But maybe more impressive is the parallel efforts. You kind of are paying it forward. You know, you are a co-founder mm-hmm. of Girl Geek Academy, and you are really kind of promoting getting women into STEM, which, again, is a shared passion of mine. And yesterday, when we were preparing for this, I was showing Lisa a video that we put out on this year's International Women's Day at Microsoft. And after watching the video, Lisa basically said, this is a lot of the reason why they're doing what they're doing with Girl Geek Academy. So I thought I'd run it just to kind of give a little bit of information about where we are with girls in STEM before we kind of move into Lisa's. Things that we found, we do a bunch of research at Microsoft about women and diversity in STEM, and one of the reasons that we see less women going or girls going in is the perception that technology is not creative, or what you're doing with it isn't creative, and that does play a role in sort of bringing women into STEM. Gaming is, I think, you know, is technology empowering art, And Lisi was talking about seeing the same things with Girl Geek Academy. Can you talk about, like, why did you guys start this? How did you start it?
So these are my awesome co-founders up here. So Tammy Buto in the plaid, similar to what I'm wearing right now, she is a programmer, and she basically moved to Melbourne before I had. We were friends from Brisbane, and had been attending a lot of hackathons and seeing a really similar trend. She was one of maybe two, at best, women attending these events. These events were grueling. The hackathons would go 3 days, no sleep, trying to get an MVP together. There was pizza, soft drink, stuff that wouldn't really be conducive to not sleeping. And she just was kind of done with that and wanted to see if she could run something on her own that was different. And that formed She Hacks, which was the first all-women hackathon in Melbourne. And that happened in 2014. And I attended that. I went to that. She was like, come along, see what it's going to be like. This is the first try. We'll see how it goes. And she sneakily invited all of us. None of us knew each other except for we all knew Tammy. She invited all of us along, and we were part of the hackathon. I just moved to Melbourne like 2 months beforehand and hadn't really done anything like this before. I'd been very games focused beforehand. So it was awesome. I was actually in a team with April, who's our graphic designer, and it was an amazing event. I think we had 90 to 100 women attend it, and you could just see that this was something that they'd been waiting for. And that basically, then Tammy got us in a room. I think we went for dinner like the following week, and she's like, cool, we're starting a company. These are your co-founders. Let's just do this. We treated it like a hackathon and just threw together this company. We've been iterating on it since 2014 when we started, and it's been an amazing, amazing journey.
So how did you fund the first one? You guys, was it self-funded?
Self-funded. It was purely self-funded. Tammy is a great hustler, so she got some support from private companies. So we got a space given to us. We charged an entry fee. At the time, we were really bad and still are trying to figure out how to actually add value. That's something that we really struggle, especially myself. How do you feel about charging women to attend these events? So it's something that I felt really bad about at first. I was like, I don't really want to charge, but we realized we were providing a service and that we should probably charge for these things. I think it's a very classic female thing to not want to bother people, not want to, you know, ask for help. And yeah, that's, so it's very much privately funded to begin with. Yeah.
But now I think it's really interesting so right now the government funds it, right?
Yeah.
So how did you guys set that up and set the whole organization up that way?
So our first major funding, we pitched a few. So Sarah, on the far right, she is now our CEO. So she's been brave enough to quit her day job and run Girl Geek full time. And she basically is an amazing, amazing pitcher. So she will pitch to different companies. And she started pitching to government because obviously in Australia at the moment, our industry was very mining focused, and that's been awesome, but that is going to collapse at some stage. So technology is definitely one of those things that people are starting to realize that could be the future for the Australian industry. So she started pitching to different organizations, had a few knockbacks, rejections, but the federal government, so all of Australia, the Australian government, came out and announced a huge STEM fund. And we were the only non-university organization to receive $1 million to run a program that we call Miss Makes Code. And that's aimed at 5 to 12-year-olds, and it's teaching them programming through a little creature called the MissBot. It's a little felt robot you can stitch and put together. It's got an Arduino chipset in it, and you can plug it in and program it from there. We trialed it with women, so adults, and they loved it, so we kind of went back from there and started teaching 5-year-olds, who are terrifying because they're so smart and so just like, this is so incredible. and we are now also luckily to be funded by another organization called Launch Victoria and Film Victoria. So they've both come to the table and are sponsoring a whole different range of events for us, which has been amazing.
Well, tell us about, like, we have a video, but also tell us about, like, what are the different events, how many people attend these, mm-hmm. and, like, how do you make them attractive for mm-hmm. basically attracting, a lot of women have no technical background, mm-hmm. right, when they come to these?
Yeah, definitely. We're trying to solve the problem definitely of that early to mid-career. We're trying to figure out how we keep women in STEM, how we make sure they have friends, because a big thing that we saw is as an adult, female in tech? How do you make friends within tech? You may be the only female in your company. You may not meet other women in your team. So this is another reason why we've kind of created these events. So we run She Hacks as our flagship event. So that's a hackathon. And then that's followed by an incubator program. So we run that. It goes for a month. And we basically continue to build those companies from there. We also run Miss Makes Code, as I mentioned. We run Miss Makes, which is a 3D workshop teaching how to make wearables and 3D printing models. We run She Makes, She Hacks Games, and Miss Makes Code teaching teachers. So it's another thing that we've done to trying to address the problem is teaching them how to fish, so actually teaching the teachers to then go on and teach their students for years to come. So the video we have next is actually showing She Hacks. So a She Hacks event, and what we've done is, as I mentioned before, the pizza and the soft drink and all that kind of stuff, we're trying to make these events much more inclusive and accessible. You don't sleep over, that's one big thing. Everyone needs to go home. We make sure everyone's well fed, well hydrated. We have amazing food sponsors that come on board, which is always my favorite thing. We have cheese platters. We have like all this kind of stuff. It's very important to feed people well. We have yoga on the Saturday morning to revitalize the mind, because that's just as important as the body. So that's very important. And we also do things like, while there is a pitching session at the end, we try and keep the competition limited as possible, because it's not about the end product, it's actually about the skills that you've learned along the way.
You guys also have childcare at your events.
Oh, yeah, childcare. Sorry, I should mention that. That's a very important thing that we've learned along the way, is childcare is very important. Yeah. One of my favorite things is last year at one of our events, we actually had, because people obviously tweet during the evening and they hashtag everything, and one of our amazing new mothers tweeted, she's like, I think my best breast pump's too loud, hashtag women in games or something, because she was pumping at one of the events, at one of our workshops, and that's awesome. And she still was like, oh, I'm sorry, can you please put this in the fridge? I was like, yes. Like, I hate that that's potentially a problem. I'm not a mother. I'm a mother of 15 kids at the studio at home. But I don't understand why this is, like, everyone's having babies. It's a thing. It's not as if, yeah.
It's a thing to do.
It's something that we've definitely learned. So if you have children over 3, we'll provide babysitting services for all of our events. If they're under 3, you're more than welcome to bring them along. We've had people bring their parents in to help and, you know, look after them, because it's under 3 gets a bit difficult with legalities and stuff, I think. But yeah, it's definitely something that is very important to us.
Great. Can we run the video?
I'm Eliza and I'm a hipster. I'd really like to make some great connections with people and to, yeah, build a product. I've learned a lot more about game design, so we're making a game and I've never really done that before, so that's pretty exciting to try something new. I've got to do some illustration and things, so that's pretty awesome. Yeah, it's going really well, I think. We've got augmented reality working, which is really, really cool. Yeah, it was really fun. It's been a great weekend. I've done lots of things that I didn't think that I would do, or that I wouldn't think would be something that you could achieve in a weekend, but we have. It was a really awesome weekend. We made game in a weekend, which is amazing.
One of the things that we have from Microsoft research as well on women in STEM is, when I graduated, which was just a few years ago, there were 35% women in the United States were graduating with a CS degree. And today, those numbers are 15 to 17%. So they've dropped significantly. And some of the reasons why women either choose not to go into STEM or drop out are a couple of things that Lisa also covered, which is friends. Like, typically, you're the only one or one of a couple when you're going into computer science. And the second, but more important, which I think she really addresses with Girl Geek Academy is that you don't know what you're going to do with the CS degree. The way that most CS degrees are taught, there's not necessarily a practical application. And I think that you guys do an amazing job of talking about a lot of productivity, but also, you know, gaming. And I kind of wanted to bring this back to merging your passions together, because you guys do a little bit with gaming, but now you're going to start some new gaming tracks with Girl Geek, right?
So like I was saying before, the early career, mid-career is where we're really hitting home. And like you were saying, Bonnie, with these stats, it's quite similar in Australia. So we're seeing not being able to understand where you want to go is definitely a big part of the problem. So seeing people in positions of power, like seeing yourself and Kiki and everyone here, it's inspiring for me to be able to stand that, okay, this is fine. The whole fight that we're fighting is definitely worth it. So what we're seeing is giving women these opportunities to see other women in the industry, especially seeing them locally, so seeing them in Melbourne. So we could do things like Skype people in, like we have amazing connections with people overseas, but I really wanted women to see what people are doing right now. So the first event that we started running for games is called She Makes Games, and it's actually really similar to this, and that's why I've loved this event today, because it's really, really similar. It's a one-day event, and it's aimed at women that are probably in university looking to transfer from tech to games. So we see a lot of women that have worked in web dev but want to make games, so they're trying to figure out how to transition to that career path. And we start the day, we have an introduction, we have some panels, so we bring women from different areas of the industry in Melbourne and we show them and talk about their experiences and their journeys, and then we break off into three different tracks. So we have similar before, Hipster, Hacker and Hustler, so we have a programming track, we have a design track, and then we also have a marketing track. So we want to show that there are different areas of the industry. So if you're a programmer, you could potentially go over and actually do the marketing track and learn about what games marketing looks like. And then from there, we actually take them to eat lunch, because that's really important. And then we have some more panels from different angles. So we try and talk about different stories, talking about similar to this, like pitching games and all that kind of thing. And more importantly as well, we also, similar to this event, we have a networking session. So networking, I think, is, as everyone knows, because you're here, is very, very important. But we try and cater it as much as possible. So I do try and talk about and introduce who will be at the networking session. Tell people, these are the people that I think are really interesting. If you want to be introduced to them, please let me know. Because I think another thing is feeling that, the whole imposter syndrome when you're at an event. And if you're there on your own, which is incredibly brave, if you ever come to an event alone, it's amazing. If you're alone at a game for women, you should really never be alone, because there will be there someone there to help you basically facilitate these conversations. So we help bring people together, introduce people to studio owners, people that will be potentially looking at hiring in the future, even just people to be a mentor. So that's something that we do at the end. We have a networking session, and we also bring in video games that are made by women locally. So that's another thing that we do, and we get those developers to actually sit there, talk about the game, and talk about their stories one-on-one over food and drinks. So that's been our flagship event. We've run it for three years in a row, and it's been awesome. And we're actually about to launch our first game jam next month, which is really exciting, really nerve-wracking. So we've taken everything we've learned from hackathons and applying it to the game jam kind of thing. And we're going to see how it goes. It's been our actual most successful sign-up rate ever for any of our events. So I think people are ready for it, which is really exciting. But yeah, that's games.
That's great. And speaking of networking, when you're talking about these events and networking, so you co-founded Girl Geek Academy prior to getting your job in the game industry. Mm-hmm. And you were just mentioning that, you thought it helped, that was maybe one of the reasons you got into gaming.
I definitely think it was definitely an addition to how I got my job, I think. I don't know. Blake could probably contest to this because he's here, my boss is here, so this is cool. I think a big reason why, like a producer, I'm a producer now, how do you have a portfolio if you've never produced a game before? It was something I tried to figure out when I was in university. I knew I wasn't going to be a programmer. That was something that I tried and failed at, and what didn't work with how my brain works. So I was trying to figure out how do you actually build a portfolio, build a impressive resume to be hired if you have never done the thing. So you just make it up. you just make it up and figure it out. And co-founding a company, I thought, was very similar. I'd learned a lot about project management through my job in the finance industry, but actually building a company from scratch, I thought, well, that's something that I can add. And it's a leveraging point too. If I want to start conversations with someone, I'll be like, hi, I'm Lisa. I'm a co-founder of this startup called Girl Geek Academy. We hadn't really done anything at that stage, but we had a website, so that was real. I had an email address, and that was real. And it meant that I could start having these conversations with people because it was something that I was really passionate about, something that I wanted to grow. And I think that was the reason why Trent and I started talking, was because he wanted to discuss how to get more women to be involved with free play. So it definitely, I don't think the steps may have, it may have been a slower journey to get where I was if it wasn't for having that company and that little, you know, the little tick of approval of, you know, doing something on my own.
But we were talking yesterday and you were saying that you're actually seeing women who are attending these events actually moving on to tech jobs or mm-hmm. gaming jobs. Mm-hmm. Can you share some about that and even how you look at resumes?
Yeah, definitely. We see a lot of awesome things come out of it. We are having women form companies and finding their co-founders at a lot of our hackathons, which is awesome. They continue to go on and work on their projects. They may completely scrap the project, but they may have found that one person that gets them, which has been really awesome. I'm gonna actually embarrass you as well, Inga. I'm glad you're here. I remember you coming up to me after attending the first She Makes Games that you went to, and you were so excited and inspired of the event. You're like, my friends and I, we're gonna start a company together. And this is from attending an event the day before. And to me, I was like, okay, cool. That's all I needed to know, that all this hard work is worth it, because it inspires people. It makes people, sorry for embarrassing you. But Inga's awesome. Everyone should talk to Inga. She's amazing. But that's the reason that we're trying to do this, is we're trying to connect people and give people opportunities where they may never have had this opportunity before. Because I feel very thankful that I've been able to... my story is pretty easy. I feel like it's easy, my job experience. I feel like I was very fortunate and very lucky. So I definitely want to pay it forward to help other people facilitate that journey as well.
I don't know if I'd call that easy. And she's done in less than four years, I think more than I've done in my career. And so when you think about some of the things you're thinking about Girl Geek Academy going forward, I mean, can other people participate? Are you expanding globally? Or how are you thinking about the next few years?
Scaling has been very difficult. It's been really hard because we're obviously so far away. We are currently looking to expand to America. I was trying to figure that out. But I really don't think there's anything that will stop. There are amazing girl gangs being created all over America at the moment. So if you are living in a place similar to Melbourne that's very isolated, you just need to find these similar people. I think one of the big things, I would never have been able to do this alone. There's no way that I would have been able to do this by myself. I think one of the biggest thing is finding that girl gang, finding your squad. It may not be all women as well. You may have amazing allies out there that can help you along the way. I don't think there's anyone out there that would be able to see what we're doing and be inspired. I think you should be able to do that on your own. And definitely reach out to us. We're always happy to help, give advice and all that kind of thing, because we've done so much to build this, and we've learned a lot from other companies throughout the world as well that are doing amazing things. But I would love to see more girl gangs being built throughout the world. It doesn't have to be a big gang either. It just needs to, if it's just five of you, I think if you're getting together and building something, I think that's just as inspiring as any other organization.
One of the things working on Halo, when I think about Lucy's path, it is super hard, if not impossible, unless you have a CS degree, to get into one of the bigger gaming companies. But there is a path that I think is, when you think about if you want to get into games, I think that it's interesting what you're doing with some of these events and going to these events and actually getting that networking. But I also think that starting in indie or mobile is also a great way to get into the industry. And once you have a game cred, you know, you can then pretty much use that to open the door to wherever you want to go going forward. So I think that, you know, the path that you took is actually a really interesting path for getting in. Which, speaking of, so what's your plans for the next 4 or 5 years.
Well, domination. But I think, yeah, we're definitely wanting to scale Girl Geek even more. We're trying to figure out how to grow it. It is really hard to sustain it. As you heard, we only are doing funding through government at the moment. We haven't gone to that next level of, like, C-level funding and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of in the future for us. I think we wanting to take a slow approach because we want to do it right. Because we could, if we scaled too quickly, I feel there's potential for investors to potentially make it into something that we don't want to make it into. So we're gonna continue to take it slowly. We've got a lot of really exciting things. I just got an email today that's like really exciting that we're working on. So we're continuing to build on this. I definitely, as I become more experienced in the games industry, there are things that I want to see continuing through what I want to create for events, because we're obviously starting this pipeline for early career, but I want to see what happens when we actually go to the senior level. I don't feel like I'm at that level yet, so I can't really run events for those people yet, but that's something that I want to address next, figuring that pipeline out. As for League of Geeks, we are very, very busy. We are very, very, very busy at the moment. So we are working on exciting new things. We're continuing to grow and expand the team. And it's really, really exciting to see a studio go from, yeah, 7 or 8 people to we're at 17 now and probably another 3 hires over the next 6 months. I don't know, very, very soon. But it's exciting. It's Australia is growing as well as an industry. Independent games are growing as an industry. And it's... yeah, it's really exciting.
I know your boss is sitting here, so yeah, we'll be careful with this question. So I'll put like 5, 10 years, like I'm sure your boss is with you, but like where do you see, like where do you want to go next? Not just with Girl Geek, but you know, you've done so much so soon in your career. Like where do you see yourself in 10 years?
My bosses can retire and I'll take over, so it'll be fine. They deserve a holiday. No, it's it is interesting because in obviously in AAA studios and big companies like Microsoft, we were talking about this. You can see the track. You can see where you go upwards. It is really hard with independent studios because it's hard to see that pathway. You kind of have to create your own. So that is definitely something that I've been thinking about, figuring out where I want to go. So last year I was very fortunate. I got to go and work at a few different studios overseas. And thanks to Film Victoria, I got a fellowship through them and I got to work at Media Molecule, Obsidian, and see what their paths were like. And I'm still figuring it out. I love working with people and growing teams, but I also do like the production side of it. So I'm trying to figure out how to, which one I'm better at or which one I prefer. And I think it will change as I become more and more challenged and the team grows. But I think there's definitely a track beyond production for me. I just haven't quite figured that out yet.
Okay, well, for me, it was an honor to get a chance to interview you. And I don't know if, before we open up to questions, if you have any parting advice. I know there's a lot of early in career sitting in the audience. Or if you have any words of wisdom that you want to impart on the audience before we open it up for Q&A. Social do-gooder. Game producer.
I think just the biggest thing I always say, and I said it before, is definitely finding those friends and allies that can support you along the way. Whether it's in person or online, I think one thing I didn't really talk about is how powerful things like Twitter are. I've met so many people online that I only ever meet at events like this, at GDC, that I DM and ask how they've solved these problems. I have production Facebook groups that I'm part of and I ask questions, and I've never met these people, but they still seem to be able to give me advice, even though they don't know who I am, they don't need to answer these questions, but they are there and they're willing to help you. The industry, even though we're international, I think the internet obviously helps bring us together, but Twitter and Facebook and all these places, ask for help, look for the people, stalk your idols online. That's what I say. That's what I do. That's what I do. I find those people that I really respect and see what they're working on, understand how they do and how they do the business, and trying to figure out if that fits with what I want to do.
Well, thank you, social good founder stocks people online. Yes. Well, thank you so much. We wanted to open it up for any questions the audience has. So thank you, Lisi.
Thank you.
questions. There are mics around if people have questions.
So I'm about to do a hackathon for my VR class at a community college, which means full semester class for like $158 in virtual reality with all the VR headsets, all the hardware there, the good stuff, not the 360. It's Vives. Anyway, so I don't know how to do a hackathon. I've got Microsoft help offering. Somebody from Microsoft said, sure, we could help you. I've got all kinds of people saying they could help me, but what's the most important thing I need to know about doing a hackathon? You know, I'm providing equipment, I have it. What do I do?
I think, are you wanting to pre-select teams or are you wanting to let them do their own thing? I think making sure they are within teams that they're comfortable with is going to be, are they going to be solo hacking or in teams?
I don't know. What do you think?
I think teams are always good for hackathons.
Okay.
I think unless someone really, really wants to work on their own, which is also fine. Mm-hmm. I think a big thing with hackathons is actually making friends and hanging out. So we actually do pre-selected teams. We don't let people do their own thing. We do a questionnaire before all our events, finding out what their skill levels, finding out, we ask them a bunch of weird psychology questions, and then we try and pair them in teams we think will work. We've only had maybe two or three people cry. It's been okay, I feel. But I think figuring out how you want it to look is going to be very important. I could literally talk to you for hours on how to run a hackathon.
Can I talk to you later?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
And can I promote my class? Because it's all for women and it's all VR, and I'm trying to get more women in charge in VR. Awesome. And that's why this class is cheap and you have access to the machines and great teaching.
Awesome.
Come get a card.
Hi, my company is... Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Hi, my company basically it prevents criminals from stealing the video gaming system, and if the game is left on pause, it'll remain on pause. I'm basically been talking to people from Microsoft, and I need to know who do I need to talk to make that next step. It's basically three devices that are attached to the video gaming system, and it can go on Xbox, PlayStation, anything like that, any new gaming system out. So I was trying to see who I can talk to.
So sorry, just to repeat the question. So you work on trying to kind of prevent crime
criminals,
or poor use, criminals.
Yeah, and criminals from stealing a video gaming system.
We actually have a person in our audience, Dave McCarthy, whose team works on things like that, and you could talk to him afterwards.
That's so easy. Look at that, networking. That's how networking is done.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
Go, Dave.
Are you going to give away a car as well?
Dave is like a car.
I think this is our last question, unless we have one more at time, I believe.
Hi, my name is Taylor. I guess this is a question for both of you guys, or you guys can answer. Is that I was just wondering, I know as you were talking about early and middle career, it can be a very like precarious time and lots of challenges and how you weren't sure what you wanted to do. But I was just wondering if there was ever a time where you guys felt like giving up or you felt discouraged or I'm sure, you know, and or like maybe you couldn't do it or something. And then what did you pull on or what did you think about to like carry through or like, yeah.
All the time. Like, I literally have this feeling sometimes when I'm at work. I'm like, I close my eyes. I was like, I could be working at a 9-to-5 job. I could be getting paid probably more, and I could be really miserable. That's the one thing I always think about. It always goes to that. I think about, okay, I check the list. It's something I always come back to is how happy I am in my job. So I could have the money. I could have less hours, potentially. I could have stability. I could have all these things. But the actual work that I would be doing would not make me happy. It would mean that I'd have to find my happiness outside of my day job, which, unfortunately, we do spend a lot of time at work. It's a big part of our lives. until we're whatever age that we can afford to retire. It's I want to be able to have happiness from the job. My mum always says this to me. She doesn't understand games and she doesn't understand the industry, but she's always like, I can see that you're happy in the job that you do. That isn't one of the most amazing things that you can do in your life. As long as you're happy to some extent, there's always going to be dark times. There's always going to be hard times and challenges, but the things that you're creating and those big moments, I think as long as they're outweighing the bad, then I think that's what really keeps me going.
I would say probably two things. One, for any point in career, the game industry is relatively small and incestuous, meaning that you're going to see the same people over and over, which is great for networking. It's also great for moving around, you know, and also be nice to everyone because they could be your boss in the future. But I think that's a great thing for being able to move around to different companies, to trying indie companies, mobile companies, console companies that, one, move around. And then, two, I would say for just, you know, when you were talking about, you know, if you points of disappointment or feeling like maybe you are want to throw in the towel. I would say I've had multiple, you know, mid and later in career where maybe you didn't get the role or the responsibility that you wanted. And for me, similar to what Lisa was saying is, I think there is, you know, climbing the ladder to where you want to go. And I think that's always important for pay grade, for responsibility and growth. But at the end of the day, what has kept me going is this is what I'm passionate about. You know, technology empowering art. I think there are so few places where you can bring together and really create worlds. You can create experiences that you can create in no other industry. And so even on the darkest days, or if I didn't get the promotion I wanted, I think about really what gets me up every day, which is why I say there is a point culturally, if it's not a fit, change companies. You know, I mean, I think there's so much diversity in what we do in this industry. Find the place that fits, but, you know, seek your passion.
Great. Thanks, you guys.
And thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.